Shall we begin with a word of prayer? Heavenly Father, we thank you for bringing us together this Sabbath day in the Zoom meeting. We ask that you'd watch over the transmission, that we have no technical problems. We ask that you'd grant us your Holy Spirit, that we can understand the light that you have for us. I ask for help to convey these truths that you place on my heart in a intelligent, or in a way that can be intelligently understood. I ask a blessing upon the work connected with this message that's going on around planet Earth at this time. And I ask that you continue to pour your latter rain out upon us in this the season of the latter rain. We thank you for these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay. Let me see. The notes that I sent out, I want to begin with the Canium number 17, which is still not edited. This is something that I'm working on, but I guess I could explain it first and then come back to this. About a couple weeks ago, Clayton got impressed to look at the waymarks of the history of this movement, the time of the end in 1989, the formalization of the message in 1996. And I addressed these waymarks in this article. That's why I thought about starting there. But he took the waymarks 2001 and then 2023. And he looked, because we in the past, for some time, we've realized that at these particular waymarks, there's been an increase of knowledge outside of spiritual truths. And the easiest way to track that is in the computer world. And so Clayton was well aware of some of those events in the computer world that aligned with our waymarks, but he went in here recently and looked at it closely, and it's amazing when you ask for the breakdown of the development of AI, that the steps along the way to where we are today parallel the waymarks of this movement. And Clayton sent me the outline of what he had put together. And I thought it was really cool. And but then I was thinking, you didn't address the foundations of this history, which is when Habakkuk's tables were presented. So I asked Clayton again, when were Habakkuk's tables? And they begin in the presentation began in 2012 and ended the beginning of 2013. So I went in and looked and seen if there was any development of light, if you want to call it that, an increase of knowledge in the computer world that would also correspond with 2012-2013, as we had found with 9/11, 1996, 2001, and 2023. And I wasn't searching the internet or anything. I got on the AI this morning to check just a basic history fact. And the thing that I seen instantly is that Elon Musk, I have no sympathies for Elon Musk one way or another. I view him as a symbol here at the end of the world of different things. So I'm not pro or con, but he came out today and said that we've reached the point of, let me see, singularity, which, you know, it's going to be hard for me to explain what singularity is, but I'm going to start here before I go to the notes. And what Elon Musk is saying is that in 2026, this year, they'll reach singularity in what I'm calling the computer world. And that doesn't mean anything, of course, unless you know what singularity represents. So I'm going to read you a brief overview of what singularity represents. And then I'm going to track for you the development of AI and computers that has taken place in this history of this movement. And I'm going to do like the pioneers did when they went into 1798 and showed the increase of knowledge from 1798 onward as the Book of Daniel was unsealed. And I'm going to claim that these particular waymarks in the world of AI are waymarks that correspond to the waymarks of this movement. And have you been reading the articles that became available in 2023 onward? There was a section when I was dealing with Daniel and Revelation, and I could see some things, and I went ahead and put them in the articles. I believed them, I still do. I didn't know how significant they might be. And the theme that I put in there was that the argument that takes place, say you have an argument in the Millerite history over Miller's message, and you can take that controversy in history and use Habakkuk's tables or the 1843 chart as the symbol of that debate that took place in that history. And you can go to the testimony of Peter in Acts chapter 2 and 3 and see the debate of his history when he's given the Pentecostal message. So there's a controversy that takes place at the end of the world that's been typified by these biblical controversies and the controversy of the Millerite history. And I was suggesting in those articles that this final controversy, it's not played out just in the United States, it's played out for the entire world, and it's done so through, the World Wide Web, however you want to articulate that, the information highway. I think you know what I mean, is that we're no longer being given propaganda through newspapers and books. We're getting our propaganda now from screens 24/7. And when Sister White warned about Satan using hypnotism in the last days, I don't think anyone that looks at it, even in a shallow, let alone deeply, denies that these algorithms that have been bu built into these propaganda machines is hypnotism. In fact, this week there was some kind of ruling, or maybe it's that Zuckerberg was in court defending their use of hypnotizing kids. They want to draw a line on how young you can be before you're confronted with this hypnotic technique called algorithms. And so early on in those articles, after 2023, I made a point to say not, that this debate of our history takes place in the realm of AI, computers, so on and so forth. And now that you can track the development of this very beast in a step-by-step fashion and see that it corresponds with the waymarks of the history of this movement, it becomes a second witness, as it was for the Millerites when they identified the increase of knowledge represented by the Industrial Revolution, and on and on and on. So, if you don't know what singularity is, join the group, because I knew nothing about it until this morning when I went in to look, get an answer, and I seen that on X, Elon Musk had said, "We're now in singularity." And what in the world is singularity? Okay, so let me walk through this. I know that it may not seem sanctified or sacred, but I think you'll get my point when we're all done. Okay, so just give me a little bit of slack here on that. The technological singularity, often just called the singularity, is a hypothetical future point in time when technology progresses driven primarily by artificial intelligence. It becomes so rapid and powerful that it accelerates beyond human control and comprehension, leading to unpredictable and profound transformations in human civilization. So the people that are involved with AI, they know about the possibility that the AI revolution gets to the point to where the machines take over. And so you have two variables here that these people that are wrapped up in this discussion speak about. They talk about when will that happen? Is it going to happen, like Musk says, in 2026? Some people say it's in 2030, 2045, off a ways. And then they have two other options. Is it going to be a blessing or a curse? Is the AI revolution going to turn the world into utopia, or is it going to eliminate humanity? Okay, that's basically the two variables there. There's a discussion about when it's going to take place, and a discussion about if it's going to be good or bad. And this morning, Elon Musk says it's going to take place this year in 2026. And when we get more into our study today, we will put some emphasis on 2026. That doesn't disagree necessarily with Musk, but it doesn't contradict him either. Anyway, you'll see. The core idea is an intelligence explosion. Once we create an AI system that is smarter than the smartest humans, often called artificial superintelligence or ASI, that system can redesign and improve itself faster than any human team ever could. This creates a recursive self-improvement loop where capability doubles again and again in extremely short time frames. Days, hours, minutes, making further developments explosive and impossible for pre-singularity humans to meaningfully predict or steer. The term singularity is borrowed from physics and mathematics. And remember, the Lord uses the natural world to illustrate this spiritual. The term singularity is borrowed from physics and mathematics, where in a black hole, the singularity is the point where gravity becomes infinite and our current laws of physics break down. We can't see or predict what happens beyond the event horizon. Similarly, the technological singularity is viewed as an event horizon in history. We can forecast trends up to that point, but beyond it, the future becomes opaque. And unaugmented human minds to unaugmented human minds. Brief history. You can look at this after if you wish. It's talking about the development of AI. 1950, early seeds appear in the work of mathematician John von Neumann, who spoke of accelerating technological change, and mathematics cryptologist I.J. Goode, who in 1965 described an intelligence explosion once machines designed better machines. We set up a website at the end of 2023. We had a website, but we went in and reset it up so that it would translate the articles into the various languages around planet Earth. And we hooked into the best AI, the system that we could do at that time period. And we almost overnight had 100, roughly 100 languages, our articles translated into 100 languages. But then we realized it wasn't the most perfect translation, and that there was the reason I'm saying this is just within a couple years, we realized that what we had started at the beginning of 2024 was already antiquated. So we moved, and now, from what we understand, the translations that are going on in these articles are pretty much perfect. And I'm just saying that as far as the explosion of the strength of AI, just in a couple of years, we fell behind and we've upgraded. And that's how fast it's going. And everyone that is looking sees that. In 1993, a computer scientist and sci-fi author, Vernon Vinge, popularized the modern concept in his essay, The Coming Technological Singularity. He predicted we could create superhuman intelligence sometime between 2005 and 2030, after which the human era would end in the sense that unaided humans would no longer be the dominant intelligence. 2005, inventor futurist Ray Kurzweil brings the idea to mainstream attention with his book, The Singularity Is Near. He argues the singularity arrives around 2045, driven by exponential growth in computing power, following his law of accelerating returns. Nanotechnology, biotechnology, and brain-computer interfaces. He has consistently maintained this timeline, recently reaffirming AGI 2029 and Singularity 2025. Timeline predictions. As of early 2026, predictions have noticeably compressed in the last few years due to extremely fast progress in large language models, reasoning systems, and scaling laws. Most aggressive near-term views. So the people who think it's going to happen the closest is 2026, this year, 2027. Some prominent AI leaders, Amodai, Musk, have publicly stated that superintelligence or something functionally equivalent to the singularity trigger could arrive as early as 2026 or within 1 to 3 years. Median expert surveys still cluster around 2040 to 2050 for four super intelligent singularity. And then here's the two, there are two camps of possible outcomes. Utopian optimistic, this is where Musk is, thinks we're just, it's everything's going to get just wonderful. Radical abundance, elimination of disease and poverty, effective immortality via mind uploading or nanomedicine. Humanity merging with AI, transhumanism, solving previously unsolvable scientific problems in minutes, or dystopian, pessimistic, loss of human agency, control, misalignment, AI pursues goals, orthogonal or hostile to human values, economic and social collapse, or even existential risks to humanity. So that's an overview of singularity. Singularity isn't just is not just very advanced AI. It's the moment when technological evolution escapes biological human speed constraints and becomes an autonomous runaway process. Whether that happens in 2026, 2030, 2025, or never remains one of the most consequential open questions in human history right now. So what I'm saying is this, whatever this, what is it called? Singularity, whatever this singularity is, it is the capstone of the light the of AI. Okay, so at the time of the end in 1989, the networked world begins. Okay, the internet. Invented, proposed, well, the transition from isolated computing to connected computing begins in 1989. Tim Berners-Lee proposes the World Wide Web at CERN, 1989. Commercial neural network research expands military and academic use. My son was, I don't know how old he was in, say, 1988. But anyway, he was just a kid, and we lived in California at Naval Weapons, the China Lake Naval Weapons Center called Ridgecrest. We lived there. I did construction. The place was growing, so there was construction work. But the church we went to in Ridgecrest, it was, I don't know, it was probably 85% of the people that went to that church, they either did work on that Naval Weapons Center in support of the scientific research that went there, or they were engineers. We went to interact it for the first 19 years of my Adventism with these engineers from Walla Walla there in Ridgecrest. And what they were doing is working on these neural networks. And my son was friends, I was friends, but he was friends with one of these engineers. And my son and this engineer put together the very first computer that could search the writings of Ellen White. I mean, it was archaic. We were still using these printers that had the holes in the paper, and it was real. It was nothing like it is today. But Clayton was there watching this right from the beginning, because the reason that these scientists out on that base were dealing with neural networks was to make weapons, of mass destruction, that had the ability to fly through the air at 1,000 miles an hour while they're spinning and still keep the target in track. So it began in 1989, according to those people that track the development of the network. Okay, I'm going to call it that for this presentation. After 1989, computing becomes network oriented. Neural networks in 1989 were early, hardware limited, and mostly rule augmented pattern systems. But the military and research labs were already testing learning systems for targeting guidance and signal classification. This was the foundational layer for everything that came later. Now, this is worldly commentators, okay? They marked 1989, which we mark as the time of the end, when the Book of Daniel was unsealed and there was an increase of knowledge. And then in 1996, and there's lots of prophetic lines that identify that 1996 is when the message is formalized. In 1996, the internet commercial explosion. Okay, next step in the internet world was 1996. The web becomes public, commercial, and global. Netscape and browsers and wars, Amazon and eBay proving online commerce works. Google founded 1996, Windows 95 adoption accelerates consumer computing. 1996 is when the internet stops being academic and becomes economic. The infrastructure from 1989 now hits consumer scale. The dot-com era is not about websites, it's about digitizing business. This period changed commerce, advertising, information discovery, and communication patterns. 2001, this is where the message is empowered. Mighty angel of Revelation 18 comes down, and there's an unsealing to return to the old paths. And when there's an unsealing, there's an unsealing. And in 2001, the mobile and platform era began. Digitization of media, plus early cloud infrastructure, always on broadband. Apple releases the iPod, portable digital ecosystem begins. Wikipedia launches collective knowledge platform model. Broadband adopts surges. Amazon begins quietly building what becomes AWS. Post 9/11 surveillance technology massively accelerates. Data analytics infrastructure grows. The beginning of cloud computing, platform ecosystems, digital content dominance, always connected infrastructure, and the groundwork for social media and smartphones is laid here. Okay, this is the found. The time period where the first angel comes down, and now you're going to build the foundation. And the foundations of this message was the presentation of Habakkuk's tables that was over a long period of time, beginning in 2012 and ending at the beginning of 2013. And these revelations about AI, about the web, are not. They're called those. These are waymarks that come from their own analysis. This is the same ones that we have, but they have them for a different reason. And what I'm saying is, I'm not reaching into 2012 and 2013 and pulling some newspapers together and saying, look at this makes the waymark. I'm reaching out to the people that are in this industry, and they're saying this is a waymark in this history. The birth of modern artificial intelligence, 2012, 2013, the deep learning breakthrough. This is the pivotal moment when neural networks stopped being experimental and became practically powerful. The exact bridge between the 2001 platform cloud era and the 2023 generative AI explosion. September 2012, AlexNex, a deep convolutional neural network, wins the ImageNet competition by a massive margin, crushing all previous algorithms. This single event is universally recognized in AI research as the moment modern deep learning was born. 2012, Geoffrey Hinton's team proves that deep neural nets trained on GPUs can learn hierarchical features automatically. 2013, Google acquires Hinton's company. Industry suddenly pours billions into deep learning. NVIDIA's GPUs advances, CUDA become the standard hardware for AI. Big data tools mature alongside this, enabling the massive data sets needed for deep learning. This is the foundation for this industry, and it was the foundation of this message. Of course, there's going to be a disappointment in this message, and we're going to go in the wilderness, but we're going to come out in 2023, and there's going to be an unsealing in 2023. 2023. Generative AI crosses the threshold. AI becomes accessible, usable, and economically disruptive. Not just better neural networks. This is the moment AI writes codes, generates images, automates white-collar work, scales reasoning tasks, and for the first time, AI stops being specialized and becomes general-purpose cognitive tooling. So then I'm not making no prophecy. I'm not set forth a prophecy here. But what I'm saying is in 2023, what we're expecting is when we leave the Exeter camp meeting, if you understand my logic, when we come together in the upper room and we have the message of the midnight cry, then we're going to be lifted up as an ensign, and there's going to be an outpouring of the spirit that hasn't It hasn't happened before, and it just continues on through the Sunday law. So we expect in the near future in this movement for the most significant unsealing of truth at the point in time that we call the midnight cry that's ever happened. And what they're saying now, what some people like Musk is saying, 2020, he's saying it's here. This morning he says it's arrived. Some people are still saying it's off, 15 years or so, and I don't care whether it's off. I just want you to see that every one of these waymarks here from 1989, 1996, 2001, 2012 to 2013, 2023 have had a corresponding development in the world of AI, and we know the next unsealing of light is the message of the midnight cry being proclaimed. And in the context of AI, that would be singularity. This is when the effect of every vision takes place. Okay, 1989, the unsealing of the time of the end, network continuity begins, foundation for global knowledge flow, tied to the USSR collapse as the waymark for Adventism's final probationary time. 1996 is the formalization of the message, commercial web sales, the information of economy, digitizing commerce and discovery. 2001 is the empowerment of the message, platforms, clouds, always on access, lay digital ecosystems for collective mobile knowledge. 2012, 2013, laying the foundation for true intelligence. Deep learning breakthrough makes machine understanding practical and scalable. 2023, an unsealing climax. Generative AI crosses into general purpose cognition, making knowledge, creation, and reasoning accessible and disruptive. This progression is elegant. Each stage builds cumulatively on the prior one, shifting from connectivity to commercialization to ecosystem to intelligence to cognition. 2012, 2013 is the critical hinge, the moment the neural net proved capable of hierarchical automatic learning, which made the 2023 generative explosion inevitable. Without that 2012 architectural shift, the transformer models, 2017, and massive scaling wouldn't have produced ChatGPT level generality or none of the other ones. So I'm saying that the natural world is aligning with the waymarks of this history. So before I read that article, let's look at 250 years. Maybe I don't know. I suppose I'm done with that presentation of AI, and some may be happy because it's not a thus saith the Lord, it's just historical events. But it isn't a coincidence, and it is giving an endorsement to this movement from a direction that's pretty significant. Okay, pretty significant because what's being described in that is an increase of knowledge, and from 1989 until the close of human probation, the faithful among God's people will continually be experiencing an increase of knowledge, and it continues on through eternity. So it's a line outside of the spiritual that is natural, that is confirming what we've been teaching. So where I think we're at now, but everyone can be fully persuaded in their own mind. I think we're at the point in prophetic understanding where we now have been given the job assignment to recalculate, however you want to express it, the Nashville prediction of 2020. And at the very point in time where that's coming to the surface, that will have to take place, and that we need to be about our business of doing that, the Lord has opened up lines of prophecy that no one's ever seen before. And those lines of prophecy are building a very nice model on the work of recalculating the message of the midnight cry. And I contend that this study we're going to look at here is another piece of light that the line of the tribe of Judah has opened up, similar to, not going with the details, but similar to what he opened up in Daniel 12, with the three time prophecies in Daniel 12 that can now be understood in a clear, consistent way, like they never could be understood before, or like the three lines of covenant history that are found in Genesis and Matthew and the book of Revelation in chapters 11 to 22, 33 chapters in three different books, and the parallels are astounding. You could camp out studying just that for years and years. And at the same time, he's opened up Leviticus 23 in a fashion that the Hebrew world that has been studying Leviticus 23 since Moses, and the Christian world that's been studying Leviticus 23 since Christ, and the Adventist world that's been studying Leviticus 23 since 1844, he's opened up Leviticus 23 in a way that no one's ever seen before. And in doing so, he's illustrating the history where the 144,000 are sealed. I mean, the things that are opening up now are parallel to singularity. And this This 250-year prophecy, it represents 250 years from 457 BC, takes you to 207 BC, and 250 years from the year 64, with Nero's persecuting the Christians, until the Edict of Milan in 313 is 250 years. And 250 years from 1776 to 2026. And those three lines of 250 years we're going to look at here at the beginning. And I'm calling the top line Medo-Persia, the middle line Rome, and the last one the Glorious Land. The last one's easy. The Glorious Land is the United States. I'm calling the middle line Rome because it begins with Nero and it ends with Constantine at three-way marks. And 457 begins with Cyrus, but you can't separate Cyrus from Darius. So it's the Medo-Persian kingdom. And it's nice that it's the twofold kingdom of Medo-Persia because there's going to be two time prophecies that start in 457. This one we're looking at now, the 250 years and the 2300 years. And that we'll find that the 250-year time prophecy that's on your screen now, that ends in 207, that it's an external line, and the 2300 years that starts in 457, it's an internal line. One's talking about the history that in the book of Revelation would be represented by the seals, the external, and the other line is talking about the history that's represented by the churches. So we're going to look at the Medo-Persian 250-year line. We're going to look at the line of Rome, which takes us to the Edict of Milan in 313. But the Edict of Milan, it opens up three way marks for Constantine the Great. 313, the Edict, followed by the First Sunday Law in 321, followed by the division of the kingdom into East and West in the year 330. And so that particular line, Rome, the history at the end, 313, 321, 330, is illustrating the setting up of the image of the beast. We'll get to that. That's the emphasis that's coming from the line of Rome. Plus, in the line of Rome, you can see a counterfeit of the parable of the 10 virgins. Okay, right at the time period when the parable of the 10 virgins is being fulfilled. And then in the Glorious Land line of 250 years, we're going to break that down. I won't try to explain it. I'll just go to the next slide and see if you can follow my logic here. Okay, I'm first taking up the line of the Medes and the Persians, and I'm using Cyrus up here on the top. I know that 457 is the conclusion of the decrees of Cyrus, Darius, and Artaxerxes, okay? But I'm using Cyrus as a starting point just to group them all together. And this line on the top, it goes from Cyrus to Antiochus. And Antiochus that it goes to is Antiochus the Great. And it takes you 250 years from 457 BC. It takes you to the year 207. And the year 207 is 10 years after the Battle of Raphia and 7 years before the Battle of Panium. Okay, and I want you to take note of that because the 10 and 7 we're going to look at. And you the I'm putting this 250-year period as the Medes. That's why up here I have Medo. Okay, I'm dividing Medo-Persia into two horns because it typifies the United States, and it has two time prophecies when you recognize that this is 250 years from 457 to 207 BC. And this is the 2300 year prophecy. But both of them begin at the same starting point. And I'm saying the one that ends down here on the top line that ends in 207 between the Battle of Raphia and the Battle of Paneum, that's the external line of prophecy. And I'm saying it's represented by metal, okay? And if you were going to say the Medes and Persians represent the United States and its two horns, then the Medes would be the Republican horn. And the Persians would be the Protestant horn. And that's how I have it laid out down here on the bottom. Persia is the prophecy of 2300 days, and it's the internal prophecy that takes you to the cleansing of the sanctuary, the atonement, the combination of divinity with humanity. So the two lines of Medo-Persia break down as you see there. And if you see the little dots here, all I'm doing up here in the right-hand corner here, and I'm going to take that off. If you're watching it, I want you to see it. Is that corner? I'm illustrating it down here at the bottom. Okay, and Raphia down here on the bottom is the Ukrainian war that begins in 214. It escalates in 2022, begins in 2014, it escalates in 2022. And here is Antiochus the Great in 207 BC, 10 years after Raphia and 7 years before Paneum. This is an illustration of external down here in the bottom. It's the one I'm saying is Medo is associated with the 250 years from Cyrus, or from Cyrus, Darius, Artaxerxes unto Antiochus the Great. And okay, I think that's enough on that slide. This is Rome now. We looked at Medo-Persia's line of 250 years. This is the line from Nero to Constantine the Great. Okay, and the 250 years takes you to here. And this is a period of persecution. And when you get to 313, and I have that illustrated over here a little bit more carefully. When you get to 313, you have the Edict of Milan. And the Edict of Milan, 8 years later, has morphed into the very first Sunday law by Constantine in the year 21, 321. And then in the year 330, Constantine divides the kingdom between East and West. So I'm going to align the Edict of Milan with the Patriot Act at 9/11. And down here on this bottom line, it might get a little bit hard to follow because of the fractal I have down there. So before we get down there, I want to discuss the middle line here that is illustrating these three steps, 313, 321, and 330. If you go into the history of the Edict of Milan, it was not a singular law. It was a series of edicts that came from Licinius, who was the emperor of the East, that was establishing religious liberty. Okay, and he sealed this change of a period of persecution to a period of freedom of religion, so to speak, by marrying the stepdaughter of Constantine. So in the year 313, you have the Edict of Milan, and all the historians will tell you it was not a singular rule, it was a development of rules. And it's really cool that it is that way, because what 313 and the Edict of Milan is identifying is the beginning of the image of the beast and the beginning of the coming together of church and state. And Sister White is clear that the history from 313 to 321 is this escalating compromise that leads to the Sunday law, and then national apostasy of 321 is followed by national ruin in 330. So the idea that the starting point of this history is a progressive series of edicts corresponds with the step-by-step process of the image of the beast. But don't miss the marriage, because you have a marriage between Constantine of the West, his stepdaughter, marries the emperor of the East, Licinius. So in 313, you have a marriage that the purpose is to bring the providential purpose, whether the players involved understood it or not, the purpose was to bring paganism together with Christianity, and the height of that work is the year 321. But when you get to the year 330, Constantine divides the kingdom into east and west. So what you have there in 313, you have a marriage, and in 330, you have a divorce. Okay. But in 321, you also have a marriage. Okay. Because 321 is the first Sunday law. And the first Sunday law in our history is the Sunday law in the United States. And at the Sunday law in the United States, the whore of Rome is going to commit fornication with the Glorious Land. And the Glorious Land is simply the first of the kings that she's going to commit fornication with. It's the first, just like France was the first. And became in the time of Clovis and became known as the eldest daughter of the Catholic Church and the firstborn of the Catholic Church. The United States is the first Sunday law. And at that point, she's married to the papacy. It's an unholy marriage. But what I want you to see is that in 313, there was a marriage between East and West. And then in 321, the symbolism of the Sunday law is identifying the consummation of the marriage. And what you have there is an illustration of the parable of the 10 virgins, where first the marriage is legally put in place in 313 between Constantine's stepdaughter and Licinius of the East. And thereafter, after a period of time, they're going to go to their father's house and they're going to consummate the marriage. And the consummation of the marriage is 321, the first Sunday law. And what you find is that the Edict of Milan in 313 is marking the beginning of the setting up of the image of the beast in the United States. And as it's doing that, it's illustrating a counterfeit parable of the 10 virgins. Okay. And it's doing so in the identical time that the parable of the 10 virgins is being fulfilled. So, I mean, this, you can't make this stuff up, and who would want to? Okay, so what I'm saying here, down on the bottom line now, that I've given some background of what 313, 321, and 330 represent, what it represents is the formation of the image of the beast that leads to the Sunday law. And in the formation of the image of the beast that leads to the Sunday law, there are three steps represented by 313, 321, and 330. So if we look at the bottom line, we have taught for years that the image of the beast testing time is from 9/11 here over to the Sunday law. When the United States speaks as the dragon, it's enforcing the mark of the beast. And when it enforces the mark of the beast, the image of the beast has been fully developed. Okay, so from 9/11 until the Sunday law is the image of the beast testing time in the United States. And that very same history will be repeated in the world, because the United States is going to force the whole world to go out and set up an image of the beast. So the history from 9/11 to the Sunday law is repeated in the history of the Sunday law to the close of human probation. But If we look at 9/11, we see that what starts that history is the Patriot Act. And I'm saying that the Patriot Act represents a series of actions that lead to the overturning of the Constitution at the Sunday Law, just as the Edict of Milan led to a series of events that led to the first Sunday Law. But 9/11 here to the Sunday Law is also a fractal of 2023 to the Sunday Law. So from 2023 to the Sunday Law down here, we're going to have to see 313 in 2023, 321 in the middle, and 330 at the end. So this fractal down here is representing, hang on, let me see if this will help. It's representing this history here. But this history here that this fractal is representing also occurs over here in this history. And the structure of 313, 321 to 330 is a structure that's presented as the climax of the 250-year prophecy that begins with Nero, marking a 250-year time of persecution that is supposedly brought to an end in 313. In reality, it's just moving to a papal form of persecution. And it, in reality, represents compromise, not religious freedom. But in any case, that's the 250-year prophecy of Rome. The edict, this is another breakdown of it from the point of view of the counterfeit marriage. Okay, the edict in 313 is the Patriot Act. And in the decree in 321 is the first Sunday Law decree, and the year 330 is the Sunday Law. Okay, and I have a couple fractals going here on the screen, so let me take you through this slowly. I've already taken you through it once. There is an edict, okay? I'm saying Patriot Act up here, that leads to a decree, which is the first Sunday Law, that leads to 22:11 of Revelation, which is he that is unjust, let him be unjust, still the close of human probation. So this line here that says Patriot Act and goes to the Sunday Law and then to the close of probation, that line there is 9/11 till Michael stands up. But within that is a fractal, which is what I'm starting in 2025. I'm saying that here in 2025, in our history, you can see the marriage. Because both the Antichrist of Bible prophecy and the eighth president that is of the seven were inaugurated in 2025. And I'm saying that the number 25 is primarily a symbol of the parable of the 10 virgins. And what's taking place from 2025 onward to the Sunday Law in the United States, that's all I'm dealing with here, is the Sunday Law in the United States in this line. Is that 2025, you could see the symbol that establishes the vision. The first, the only pope that originated in the Glorious Land. And the Glorious Land has always been the object of attack by Catholicism. Their writings are abundant with this fact. This is what they want to capture. They want to capture the glorious land. And that the way that I'm saying that they wanted to ca capture the glorious land, I mean to say it that way. The struggle of presenting the truth about Daniel 11, 40 to 45, when this message first started to go in the mid 1990s, was that the theologians of Adventism and the self-supporting ministries, they wouldn't accept that verse 41 of Daniel 11 was the United States. It's the glorious land. And their argument was, well, the glorious holy mountain in verse 45 is not the United States, so the glorious land in verse 41 has to be the Seventh-day Adventist Church because it's the glorious holy mountain. And my argument was large. I had lots of arguments, but mine was is there's a difference between a land and a mountain, okay? And there is. But what I'm wanting you to see is that in the not just in this movement, but in the theological discussions about the last six verses of Daniel 11, the theologians recognize that whoever they may define the King of the North as, or whoever they may define the glorious holy mountain as, or the glorious land, it's a characteristic of this prophecy for the King of the North to be coming after the glorious land or coming after the glorious holy mountain. And that direction of prophecy, that focus of the King of the North attacking the glorious land and attacking the glorious holy mountain, is consistent with the stated goals of the Catholic Church since the Protestant Reformation. Their goal was to take control of the United States. So when you see a citizen of the United States that is elected as the Antichrist of Bible prophecy, they've reached a new milestone. And that is typifying down here in 2025, the inauguration of Trump and Pope Leo. But it's pointing forward to where probation closes on the United States down here. And where probation closes for the United States down here at the Sunday Law is in 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 4. And in 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 4, I think, I hope I have that verse right. The man of sin sitting in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Okay, and this temple of God that he's setting in is a visual, it's put in visual terms. We're supposed to understand who he is when he's sitting in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. And the height of this fulfillment is at the Sunday Law in the United States. Okay, so here, where it says close of probation 3:30, I'm looking at this as the United States, three steps that leads to the close of probation, which is the year 3:30, that's preceded by the first Sunday law, that's preceded by some kind of act or the Patriot Act or the Edict of Milan. So what I'm saying is in this history here, there's going to be a series of developments working towards the Sunday Law, and the Sunday Law is over here. It's working towards that direction. But we know from history and from Sister White that there will be a series of Sunday laws that lead to the Sunday Law, where you are forced to observe Sunday and persecuted for keeping Sabbath. That's this Sunday Law down here. But there will be a series of them that lead to this Sunday law, and there has to be a first. And the first Sunday law was 321. So, in this history from 2025, when we can see these two symbols together, that is the Edict of Milan, the Patriot Act. It's 2023. Where the same angel that came down at 9/11 comes down in 2023 and he unseals the message of this time period. He does it in 2025 because this is the parable of the 10 virgins. And the parable of the 10 virgins shows in 2023 an unholy marriage, but it hasn't been consummated yet. Okay, it's going to get consummated at the Sunday law over here in the larger sense over here. And then it's going to be followed by a divorce at the close of probation. So the marriage that we're seeing in 2025 is pointing to some event in the near future where there will be the initial Sunday law on the way to the Sunday law. And the whole history has been illustrated about Constantine the Great and the Edict of Milan and the marriage with Licinius, and then the first Sunday law in 321, and then division of the kingdom in East and West in 330. It's showing the setting up of the image of the beast in the United States, the setting of the up of the image of the beast in the world, and it's doing it in the structure of the parable of the ten virgins, where there's a marriage that takes place. And the consummation of that marriage comes thereafter. And I'm saying this is just another evidence that the number 25 is a symbol of the parable of the 10 virgins. Okay. One of the things that ties these three lines of 250 years together is the fact that two of the lines produce a period of 17 years at the end. They do it in a really prophetic fashion. The 250 years that begins in 457 BC and ends in 207 BC between the Battle of Raphia and the Battle of Panium. It does it in the middle of a 17-year period. And then the 250-year period that begins with Nero, that goes to Constantine, it illustrates a 17-year period at the end of the 250 years. But that don't matter. There's a 17-year period at the end of both of those 250-year periods. And I want to point something out here that is off subject, but I hope you can get it. Those of you that have been on this Zoom meeting on a regular basis, you have heard me for some time now trying to explain why I understand that when Christ was on the cross at the third hour and he died at the ninth hour, and Peter was in the upper room at Pentecost at the third hour and then at the temple at the ninth hour, that those two third and ninth hour prophecies testify to the ninth hour of Cornelius in Caesarea by the sea, sending for Peter at the ninth hour. But in that particular prophecy, though it's directly connected with the same prophetic structure as Christ on the cross and Pentecost, it's the same prophecy, but that one shows no third hour. And I mark the third hour with Peter at Caesarea by the mountain, Caesarea Philippi, Panium, as the third hour. But I don't have a thus saith the Lord that he was there at the third hour. What I do have is a thus saith the Lord that Cornelius sent for him on the ninth hour. And I use the third and ninth hour at the cross and the third and ninth hour at Pentecost to justify putting Peter at Panium, Caesarea Philippi, at the third hour. And the time I've spent doing that was it, if not on purpose, I had no idea, but I'm telling you, the time I spent doing that was to hopefully help us on this Zoom meeting get my point here. My point here is this: we're looking at three lines of 250 years that are clearly parallel lines. And two of those lines have a 17-year period at the end. And what I'm saying is that is a proof text to tie all three of them together the same way the three and sixth hour get tied together by two of the three references. So don't miss the significance of this 17 years, even though one is a period that is 17 years, 10 years on one side of the end of the 250 years, followed by seven on the other side of the 250 years. And the other 17 years is at the conclusion of the 250 years. That's still a witness to tie all this together. So down here on the bottom, I'm saying we have the marriage, okay? We've went through that of Nero and Const or not Nero, of Licinius and Constantine, and we have their divorce over here in 330. We have the parable of the ten virgins going on here. We have a marriage here and a consummation of a marriage here, or on the larger scale, the consummation of the marriage could be down at this, depends on where you're putting the fractal. Hope I didn't lose you. I'll back up again. I'm taking this history up here of Cyrus, which I'm putting Cyrus in the east, and I'm saying Nero is in the west, and the distinction of east and west is part of Nero's line. There's a marriage between east and west at the beginning of the line, and there's a divorce of east and west at the end of the line. But when I take Cyrus' line, I say east, 250 years is statecraft. And remember, we've already said that we also have here at 257, we have 2300 years that goes down here, and that's churchcraft. All right, so 457 is starting two lines all by itself. One's internal, one's external, one's churchcraft, one's statecraft, and the one that I'm suggesting is statecraft, is Cyrus in relation to Nero's line, okay, which is churchcraft. Because when you get down here to the end of Nero's line, you've got church activity. They're seeking to implement Sunday laws. Whereas you get to the 17 years of Antiochus, and it's about warfare. Okay, it's the state, it's the political arm, the other one's the church. That's the logic that I'm wanting you to see here. So I want to sh share something with you and argue for the validity of it, and it's the number 10 and 7. Okay, which would 10 plus 7 equals these 17 years. But I'm saying that 10 times 7 equals 70, and that 70 is a symbol of probationary time. Okay. And more often than not, it's a symbol of the close of probationary time. So in Daniel 10 7, I won't turn there, but I have it down here. Verse 7 of Daniel 10 is when Daniel sees the vision of Christ and the group that are with him flee, okay, to hide themselves. Their probation is closed in Daniel 10 7. And this is the identifying the very close of probation for Adventism in Daniel 10 7. So if you go to Revelation 10 7, you have Christ proclaiming that in the days of the sounding of the seventh angel, should the mystery of God be finished. So it's marking 18th, October 22nd, 1844, which was a close of probation in many ways. It was the door was closed in the parable of the ten virgins on the Millerite movement. The door had already been closed on apostate Protestantism, but I mean, it was nailed shut there. And the door into the holy place was nailed shut, and the door into the holy place was opened on at Revelation 10:7, which is the beginning of the work of Christ combining his divinity with humanity, of which Daniel represents the end of in Daniel 10:7. Okay, so the Midnight Cry movement in Millerite history was called the Seventh Month Movement because it took place on the 10th day of the seventh month. Okay, so that movement was leading to October 22nd, 1844, and it was a 10 and a 7. It has to do with the closed door, as does 1844. In Daniel 9:24, you have 70 weeks that are determined, cut off for thy people. Okay, the 490 years of probationary time for ancient Israel is symbolized by 70 weeks. And in Matthew 18:22, when asked if you forgive your brother seven times, Jesus said, you'd forgive him 70 times seven. So he marked 490 years as probationary time, but he uses 70 consistently as a symbol of that, of probationary time. So what I'm saying is, when you get to the division of Antiochus the Great being standing in the year 2000 BC, 7 years before Panem and 10 years after Raphia, you're in the history where probation is closing. And it closes both for the United States Protestant horn and Republican horn at the same point in time, based upon the covenant prophecy of Abram. The very first tenet in Genesis 15 includes that the Lord was going to judge his people and the nation where they were at the end of 400 years, modified or added to 430 by Paul. At the end of that time period, both Israel was going to be judged, and their judgment is represented by whether or not they had blood on the doorpost. If they didn't, then it would be the same as trying to go in the most holy place with sin. Okay? You had to have that blood on your doorpost. That was the close of your judgment. And now the nation that they've been in is going to get judged by the Red Sea. And it's typifying the United States and Adventism that are going to be held accountable to the seventh-day Sabbath. It becomes the issue in the United States first. And therefore, this period is a period of closed doors, which is part of our message. We have the message of the closed doors. Because the key of Eliakim in Isaiah 22:22 was put upon our shoulders, which means we can see the closed doors like no other people can see it. Let me see. All right. Next slide. Let me make sure that I didn't pass one over. Okay. This is the 250 years of the glorious land, and this may be too busy, but the 250 years is from 1776 to 2026. And I'm not making any predictions, and I don't have any to make. I'm not holding back on anything. But this 2026, at the 250 years of the United States, along with the prophetic histories that are represented with the decree of 457 ending in the history of Panem, and with Nero's persecution ending in the history of Constantine, it places an emphasis on 2026 that's at least interesting. And then when you go into the history of this movement from 1989 onward and look at the places where prophetically there was an increase of knowledge, and you see this knowledge in the very instrument that is going to lead out in persecuting God's people during the Sunday Law crisis. You're not going to be able to buy or sell because they're going to know who you are, where you are at all times, and in their police state that's managed by these AI systems. As you see this beast developing at the same waymarks that this movement's developing, and then there's some that are saying it's going to reach its point in 2026, and then you see a prophecy like this that takes you to 2026 with two witnesses, and those two witnesses provide more than two witnesses because they pull in other lines. It lets you, it should give you some pause, because I've spoke for years about, from 9/11 onward, is the effect of every vision is referenced in Isaiah 28, and then I explained why the effect of every vision begins in 2023, because 2023 is just the beginning of the fractal of the history that began at 9/11. But the reality of it is when the church triumphant arrives and the Holy Spirit is poured out without measure, the increase of knowledge, well, this is, as in one example, this is where the restoration of the spirit of prophecy comes, okay, because it's the restitution of all things during the refreshing. Times of refreshing is also the restitution of all things. And when the church is pure, according to Sister White, every gift is functioning. So when you get to the period of the church triumphant, which is just before the Sunday law and in the very near future, the prophet that was 30 years old and had a ministry for 22 years, Ezekiel, becomes part of the church triumphant that's made up of a prophet, priest, and king. Okay, so when the church triumphant comes, you should have this singularity where the reality is this is the point in prophetic history where you will see the effect of every vision. So 2026, it brings some interesting amplification to the histories that we've been dealing with for some time now. So what I have here on the screen is that the 250 years of the history of the United States. It begins with a 22-year period from 1776 to 1798, and that period is three steps. It's the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and then the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798. And those 22 years at the beginning of the history of the Earth Beast represent a 22-year period at the end of the history of the Earth Beast. And that 22-year period began at 9/11, as you can see on your screen. And the second waymark after 9/11 was July 18th, 2020. And the third waymark that marks the end of the 22 years at the end of the history of the Earth Beast, 250 years, was December 31st, 23, and from that point on, the temple is getting raised, erected. First the foundation, then the temple, then the litmus test. So, in Millerite history, at the beginning of this 250-year time period, in 1798 to 1844, the temple of the Millerites was erected in 46 years. So these three waymarks over here, 1776, 1789, 1798, are paralleling 9/11, 2020, and 2023. From that point on, in the beginning history, the temple is going to get erected until 1844. And in our history, the temple's getting erected until the Sunday law. And I'll add in here, but you should know the temple's finished before 1844, and the temple was finished is finished before the Sunday law, just like the temple was finished before Artaxerxes' third decree. So these two histories of 22 years followed by the erection of a temple represent the beginning of the Earth's beast 250 years and take us pretty close to the ending. I mean, I purposely made sure that that waymark where I have Sunday law didn't line up with 2026. I mean, there's structurally it may look like that, but I'm not making a prediction like that about this year. I'm just discussing what we can understand about these waymarks. So, the history here from 9/11 to 2020 to 22 to 2023, this 22 years of history here leads us to the reason I have Daniel 10:7 and Daniel 11:14 here is that these are the two visions that represent the two tests as the temple's being erected. Okay, the first vision is Daniel 10:7 is the vision of Christ in the most holy place, the Mara, not Mare, the Mara vision, the looking glass vision. And the second vision is the vision that is established by Rome. And the Mara vision over here on the left bottom corner, Daniel 10:7, that's the internal. That's the vision of the Ulai River. The vision of the church. And then Daniel 11:14, that Rome establishes the vision, is 2 Thessalonians 2:4, the man of sin sitting in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. And that verse 4, where you see the man of sin sitting in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God, is the passage where William Miller come to understand that the deity represented paganism. And when Miller understands that the deity represents paganism, it gives him the key to build every single one of his prophetic applications upon. And the key that he built it upon, and the Adventist historians will tell you this, is that there were two desolating powers, and the two desolating powers were pagan Rome and papal Rome. And until Miller figured out that the daily in the book of Daniel was pagan Rome, he couldn't build his prophetic model. And he identifies that he understood that the daily in the book of Daniel was pagan Rome in 2 Thessalonians. And in 2 Thessalonians teaches, if you don't love this truth, you're going to receive just strong delusion because you believed a lie. And these people that come to the vision of Christ in Daniel 10:7, the looking glass vision in Daniel 10:7, which is 70, closed with probation, and they flee to hide themselves. Well, the people that flee and hide in Isaiah 28, which is the chapter that talks about the latter rain methodology of line upon line, precept upon precept, there's a people in there that make a covenant with death and they hide themselves under falsehoods and lies, according to Isaiah 28. And the lie that is given to those people in 2 Thessalonians is given to them because they don't love the truth. And the truth of 2 Thessalonians is that paganism is represented by the daily in the book of Daniel, and paganism is Rome, and Rome established William Miller's vision. Okay, so it's the external vision test represented by the Hiddekel River that's talking about the statecraft at the end of the world. And that's what's been going on in this movement since December 31st, 2023, is a test over the foundation, and the foundational test was Daniel 11:14. And the temple test is Daniel 10:7. Okay, this is the history that is taking place at the beginning and the end of the history of the Glorious Land, which is represented by 250 years. And let's go to the next slide. Okay, this is just more of the last person, what I was just saying in that last slide. I broke it down differently. The 22 years from 1776 to 1798 aligning with 9/11 to 2023, those 22 years. And those 22 years take you to 2023 down here in this temple test time. And Daniel's illustrating that at the end of 21 days. Okay, you get to the 22nd day. You're at the close of probation. You're in the testing period. The door is shutting. So 2020 to 2023 is the tarrying time of the Virgin. And in the context of Leviticus 23, you have three way marks at the beginning: the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ. And you have three way marks down here at the end: the Feast of Tabernacles, the Ascension of Christ, and the Day of Atonement. And both of these way marks of three are followed by five. And what I'm saying is that the structure that's built by the 22 years at the beginning and ending of the United States, it fits perfectly in the structure that's built with Leviticus 23. Okay, the first foundational test, and that was over May 8th, 2025. Now, I'll qualify what I'm saying, but not to cop out of the reality of it. There's people, and people can get on board with this message right up to the very end. I mean, the classic example of what we're dealing with here, we're dealing with the closing doors upon God's people. What's happening to Adventism right now was illustrated by the close of probation on ancient Israel. The close of probation on the world comes after the Sunday law. It begins when Pharaoh dies in the Red Sea. And then they're going to go in the Promised Land and take out all those other nations, beginning with Jericho. That's the external line in terms of the conquering. But what the history we're in right now, this is the history of God's church. Judgment begins in the house of God. And the classic example of the people that are lost in the house of God in this judgment time is Judas. And when Sister White's describing Judas getting up from the table at the Last Supper and leaving, she said up until that point. Okay, so for Judas in that illustration, it's real clear, Bible Spirit prophecy, you can nail down the three times that he covenanted with the Sanhedrin. And when he left the Last Supper was when he was going to get his money the third time. And she says up until that point, he could have turned around, he could have repented. But at that point, forget about it. At that point in this structure is the litmus test. It's the feast, not of the Last Supper, it's the Feast of Trumpets. And the people that run and hide at that point are Judas. And so I'm saying that we're in a time period where the test, the first test, the foundational test of this movement that began in 2023, it's past tense, but someone can still come into this message and follow the logic and accept it by faith and get in on time. I get that. But in terms of explaining the seriousness and the sequence of the lines that are being opened up right now, you got to treat them the way they are. And the foundational test ended May 8th, 2025. We're now in the temple test. And the temple test, it takes place in this history, but it involves prophetic aptitude. If that's the right way to say it. We've been saying that all along, that what is illustrated in the scriptures is this testing process here at the end, that like Daniel, Shadrach, and Meshach, and Abednego, you're going to be tested on your prophetic aptitude. So it's about the methodology. It's the debate over methodology. And this methodology is teaching that we're now in the point where the capstone is to be put on the foundation 5 days before the Sunday law in terms of the feast in Leviticus 23. And that capstone is 22 times more powerful than the foundation stone. That's one of the things that Christ has taught us since 2023. He's taught us that he's Alpha and Omega. Okay, you're Alpha and Omega. What else can you tell us? And he tells us, well, I agree with the Hebrew alphabet, and Omega is 22 times larger than Alpha. And when you start seeing that emphasis added to the beginning and endings of the prophetic lines, it brings a clarity that you would not have expected until it was revealed to you how it works. And it's been revealed to us how it works. And so our responsibility is twofold. It's internal and external. It's to understand the external prophetic vision, which we would call in Daniel 8 the Chazon vision, the vision of external political events as the United States forces the world to accept the mark of Catholicism. Okay, that's the external vision, but the internal vision is the vision of Christ in the sanctuary. It's the parable of the 10 virgins, and the external is the story of Islam. Because our message that we have to correct was a message of Islam on July 18th, 2020, and we're gonna have to repeat that message with its corrections. And the corrected message has been illustrated by the beginning of Millerite Adventism and the end of Millerite Adventism, although. Anyway, 1840 and 1844. Both 1840 and 1844 have an example of corrected messages. The corrected message of 1840 was on Islam of the Second Woe. And the corrected message of 1844 was upon the prediction of 1843 being the 10th day of the seventh month, October 22nd, 1844. But on October 22nd, 1844, the door closed. The prediction of the midnight cry is the prediction of a closing door, and the prediction of Islam is this external vision of the warfare of mankind as probation closes. So our message is going to be a message about the closed door. It's going to be a message about the parable of the 10 virgins being fulfilled in the movement of the 144,000. But it's also going to be a message about Islam. And in both of those witnesses from Millerite history at the beginning in 1840 and the end in 1844, both of those witnesses say it's going to be a corrected message. And at the time that we're understanding that it is going to be a corrected message, the Lord has opened up these lines of prophecy that heretofore hadn't been seen. And they're developing a structure that we'll have to have if we're going to correct this message. So I'll give you some thoughts about correcting this message. Is it we've understood, I've understood, I've taught, and I suppose most people are probably didn't believe it if they took a position one way or another, but I still think it's true. And it's this, that the first four trumpets in Revelation chapter 8, they come into history after Constantine's Sunday law, and there are judgments upon Constantine for passing that Sunday law. And then the papacy takes the throne in 538 and passes its Sunday law. And in 606, Muhammad's born. And the first and second woe are going to be what the pioneers called that something chastisement to, of an apostate church. Okay, Islam was the tool that chastised an apostate church, and the apostasy that Muhammad identifies in his writings is that the Christian church quit keeping the seventh day Sabbath, and that they worshipped idols. That's the premise of Muhammad about rejecting Catholicism, Sunday sacredness, and idol worship. Not that I'm giving any endorsement of Muhammad, okay? So this history that we're in is the history of the Millerites all over again, a corrected message. And one of the things that I've understood in the past is that the trumpets come in response to Sunday law. So do we see a Sunday law at 9/11, a Sunday law that precipitated the attack at 9/11? Can we see that dynamic there? Do we see a Sunday law back in 1989? And the answer to all these waymarks is yes, we do. Okay, and therefore we can see in connection with the steps towards a Sunday law, if you want to track them, from 1989 onward, we've done that very thing in the past, show that there's an element typifying the Sunday law in 1989, 1996, 2001, throughout all these waymarks. We're going to have to determine if this loosing of the ass at the beginning of the triumphal entry, does it come after the Edict of Milan or before? And we're going to have to determine if the chosen people that are with Russia when the United States defeats Russia at the Battle of Panem, who are the chosen people? Are the attack of Islam upon the glorious land in the near future that we're going to predict, does it coincide with the Battle of Panem, which is the battle of the United States with an ally, Philip of Macedon, against the baby king of Egypt? Or which comes first? Do they come simultaneously? Therefore, I'm just throwing those out there to make the point that if we really are to correct the message, as Samuel Snow and Josiah Litch typify in their respective histories, I'm setting out some of the answers that would need to be put in place, but I'm doing it because I'm claiming that right now the line of the tribe of Judah is opening these lines up for that very purpose. And that these lines that we've looked at today, they're absolutely divine. Shall we pray? Heavenly Father, we thank you that you've raised us up to live in a time such as this, the time that all the righteous men and women throughout history have longed to live in, and here we are. Unworthy, unprepared, but trusting that you'll finish the work in us that you've begun, and we ask you to do that. We see movements around the world of people taking up this message. We ask that you would pour your spirit out upon them and give them discernment on how to promote this message in the best way in their part of the vineyard. And we thank you for all these things and ask that you would give us a little refreshing from a break. So we can go back and ask some questions in Jesus' name. Amen.